Joined now on the line by the managing editor of Dauber Prospects, he is Cam Robinson. And Cam, thanks for joining us as you release your top 80 rankings for the 2020 NHL draft today. And I want to start just by getting your take on how unique this experience has been for you in terms of putting these rankings together without having a completed season for the majority of the leagues that these players are coming from, and really no playoffs to speak of either.
Yeah, it's always a fun day for me to put out these quote-unquote final rankings. As we know, the draft won't be taking place for a few more months now. So if some European games are happening in September, maybe I put one more board. But it wasn't as much of a challenge for me since I've kind of made video my niche. And so obviously we lose all the major tournaments at the end of the year where kids have an opportunity to shine on the big stage and maybe elevate their draft stock. Some of these players that were, you know, starting to have really big second halves, I think that would have culminated and really pushed them up leaderboards. I try not to let those type of events sway me too much in the negative to bring a player down. So again, we lose a lot of that recency bias. But, you know, for me, extra time to go back and watch these kids a little bit too. We've been fortunate. We just announced actually today that a partnership with Dauber Prospects and Instat Hockey, which is like the premier scouting platform in the world. So I've been using it for a while now, but we've officially locked in a partnership. And so I can go watch these kids. I can see zone exits from October. I can see every shot they've ever put on net, and we can break down that video. And so for me, just really digging into the minutia of this group that seems to never end, I feel like I've been scouting them now for, I usually only spend a year on players, and this is about a year for these guys, but it seems more like 2 years. I think that's just the element that we're living in the world. The time seems to be creeping by.
Are there any players that you can pick out, and certainly it's a long list. You've put 80 players together here, and there's many more around the world. Are there guys that you think would have benefited from the season continuing that really jump out, like a guy that, you know, was playing on a good team that might have had a chance at a long playoff run? Or conversely, are there any players where, you know, their ranking is in a good spot right now and they might have seen it dip had play continued?
Like I said, I think that maybe the perception of some players, if they didn't show up on the international stage or, you know, the Memorial Cup or CHL playoffs or something like that definitely can skew their reflection on draft day. That even, you know, you can look at the public list out there, definitely weighted by some recency bias and some of these major events. But I think that NHL team lists are as well too. So, you know, there's, you know, a guy like Jake Sanderson, who was having just a terrific second half of his season, that he would have had more opportunities to showcase that. And, you know, maybe Jamie Drysdale was seeing his game plateau a little bit, I don't want to say, but the hype around him was early and often, and then you see Sanderson creeping up. So we still might see Sanderson go ahead of him when the draft finally does occur. But I think that if they'd played a couple more months, that debate would have been even closer and a little more hotly contested. It's really tough. I think a kid like Yaroslav Askarov, who a lot of people watch him at the World Juniors, and, you know, he was a 17-year-old kid starting for the Russians, which you basically never see 17-year-old goaltenders start for contending teams. And, you know, he wasn't great. He was okay. But if he could have gone and showcased his level against some of his age group at the U18s, that probably would have reignited the spark that, you know, this kid is a legit top 15 asset and by far the best goalie in this group. So, you know, players like that, it shouldn't come down to those events, but I think that there would be some up and down movement if they happen to keep on playing. Same with Seth Jarvis playing in Portland there, another huge second half that just would have continued on probably and really kind of pushed up his draft stock.
Well, Cam, I want to get into the rankings that you put out today because, you know, no one can accuse you of lacking conviction at the top of the board. You have Quentin Byfield at number one. Certainly, you know, the consensus that you hear from a lot of scouts is Alexis Lafreniere is tagged to go first overall in this draft. What is it about Byfield that let him earn the number one spot on your board?
Yeah, I stuck to my guns this year. So I had Byfield up there as of December. And it's just, in years past, I've mentioned this before on the show, is that I've maybe let some outside influences kind of influence my decision. So those pressures. And I kind of refused to do it this year, and maybe almost to a stubbornness level that I shouldn't maybe go that far. But I really love Quentin Byfield. I've been adamant that Alexis Lafreniere is the best player in this crop at the moment. And then that's not questionable. I think that whoever drafts him is going to plug and play a first line winger next season. But What you're getting with Quentin Byfield is a kid who is nearly a year younger. He's 6'4", 6'5". He's going to play at 225. He is such a rare specimen that if he develops properly, I think his upside is, you know, it's so unique. It's like a unicorn, basically. You don't see it come around. You know, we see Malkin, maybe Leon Draisaitl sort of thing. So you see, one or two a generation. He does have his flaws, though. Right now, I think he's a dominant junior player at his age. But he still needs to learn how to find those softer areas of the ice. He loves attacking pressure and getting into traffic basically every chance he gets, which is fine because in the NHL, you know, there's not much time and space out there. But I think that he's going to have to up that processing speed. And I think that I'd love to see him add a little nastiness to his game. And if he can do those things, that the sky is the limit. And that, you know, if you're talking about a potentially 90-point heavy matchup center who can just dominate in all situations, I'm going to take that over like a really, really impressive play driving winger in Lafreniere. And that's where I landed on it. And I might be the only one out there who has Byfield number one. So I might be the smartest guy in the room in a decade, or I might have a really ugly blemish on my resume, but either way, it's my opinion. So I'm going to stick with it this year.
Well, yeah, and I agree. I love to see you sticking to your guns. It can be so easy, especially with something like the draft, to kind of let groupthink sneak in and change your rankings based on what the consensus is rather than what you feel. So I love to see it. And it sounds like kind of what you're describing is, you know, Lafreniere maybe is more likely to reach his ceiling, but Byfield has a higher ceiling if he does get there. I mean, how much of a risk do you think it would be for a team to take Byfield over Lafreniere? Like, how good are his chances of reaching his potential, which, as you said, is so high?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to quantify that, it's difficult to put a number onto it. I think that maybe more so than any player in this group is what organization he lands in and the way that he's developed over the next, 3 to 5 years is going to play a major role in what his kind of peak production ends up looking like. And so I think you're absolutely right. I think Lafreniere is a very, very solid chance to be a top flight left winger, basically Jonathan Huberdeau on steroids. I think that that's the type of player you're going to get with Lafreniere, which is going to provide a ton of value. I think, he has triple digit upside if everything breaks right. Even if he ends up as a point of game player, I think he's going to be that level in that zone sort of thing. Whereas Byfield, I was talking to a head scout there recently, and he thinks that there's a chance that Byfield moves over to the wing. And, even in kind of a mid-range expectation for him, we might be looking at Rick Nash, which I think a lot of teams would take, and that's not the ceiling. So that's the type of player where Nash, he could tantalize and titillate us every, couple of games or a few shifts a game, but he wasn't doing it consistently throughout his career. I think that Byfield, that's a pretty accurate kind of mid-range expectation of what you could get from this player, and then there's even still more to give. So, his floor is still going to be a highly impactful top six guy. But if the development doesn't come and those flaws in his game don't get worked out, that you made a mistake if you took him at one. So I think for a GM to actually pull the trigger on that, they'd have to be very secure in their job position in an organization that the owner puts a lot of trust in them. Because like I said, you're taking Lafreniere and you're saying, hey guys, we've got ourselves a first line left winger next season who there'll be some adjustment period here, but you could probably bank on 50, 60 points. And then we're jumping up after that.
Cam Robinson is the managing editor of Dauber Prospects with us here on Sportsnet 650. So, the conversation seems to be Lafreniere, Byfield, Lafreniere, whatever your opinion might be, those are certainly the top two guys. How big do you see the drop-off after the two of them to the next crop that includes guys like Marco Rossi, Alexander Holtz, and Lucas Raymond?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's a clear step. I know there are a lot of public boards out there that have Stützle at number two. Hockey Prospect, we're saying that they gave him a good long look at number one. I'm not in that same boat. I think that there is a clear divide between those top two. And then you're looking at some very good, some high-end prospects. And that is, as those guys you mentioned, Rossi, Holtz, Raymond, Stützle. That's probably another little kind of gap between those guys. And then you're looking at the defensemen. I kind of lumped them all in together in the 3 to 11 range with Askarov kind of completing that. Those guys are all pretty close, especially those four forwards I mentioned. I had a really difficult time kind of ranking 3 to 6 because each of them brings their own element. I landed at Marco Rossi at number 3. He's a little bit smaller at 5'9" height, but he's built like a fire hydrant, and just he's got a high character. He's got a great motor. He's very, very strong. He's a two-way guy. I think another one who slides over to the wing because you don't see too many first line wing or centers that play at 5-of-9, if any. So I think his game is kind of tailored towards Brad Marchand minus the licking. At number three, that's where I landed there. And then you're looking at the speed, the shot, and the two-way play between Holtz and Raymond and Stützle. And so I think they're all very, very good players. And then after kind of 11, that's when you're getting into the kids got upside, but there's question marks. And so this draft class, I think 12 months ago, looked like it could be one for the ages. And I think as time has progressed through it, that we're seeing that it's probably more closer to average, is that once you get out of that, really those two top tiers, you're looking at players that, you know, yeah, they've got top six upside, they got top four upside, but they may not get there. And I don't know if they all have first line upside.
Also want to ask you, certainly we're looking at this from a Canuck perspective, as we always do here on 650. And, you know, right now Vancouver only has a third round pick, would be their earliest pick. So that's getting down lower on your list, and it's hard to project exactly where that pick is going to end up. But if you're the Canucks and you're looking at, you know, the first half of the third round and guys that could be available in that spot, who's someone that you would pick out of that group right now, assuming that that is indeed the Canucks' first pick in this draft?
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see. And, you know, maybe the, for my brand anyways, maybe they get knocked off by the Wild and they're picking at 15, 16, 17, whatever it is. And then they've got some more fun options. But, you know, I rank some players much higher than public lists are, or maybe some NHL teams do. So a kid that I've got in my first round that is, you know, kind of widely considered more of a third, fourth round asset is Wyatt Kaiser. So he's a left shot kid. He was playing in Minnesota hockey in high school. Did jump up and play some USHL as well, but I love him. I think he's got an elite brain. He's got great feet, loves to transition the puck. He's heading to a great program at Duluth. I think that this kid is you put your money on him. He's only 2 weeks shy of being eligible for the 21 class, so he's very young, projectable. I think there's going to be some teams that do love him, maybe not as high as I am, but you know, if he's sitting there, something like that for the Canucks, especially they have a need on defense, you know, pulling down here a little bit. There's a kid, Emil Heinemann, a Swedish player who was playing in the Super Elite and scored over a goal a game, 6-1, 185, and a really talented left winger. I think that there's going to be a ton of value with him. I've got him ranked 46, but again, he's kind of more expected to go in that third round. He's a player that I know some teams are interested in too. So, you know, I think Ty Tulio's a kid, another smallish center who's got a lot of skill, put up some good points this year in the OHL. Yeah, just looking around at my list here. Some of my other favorites, you know, Brett Berard, an undersized, really, really young player coming out of the development program. He's a fun kid to watch. For the Canucks, I think that they're probably looking a little bit bigger. So maybe it's Sam Colangelo, another USHL kid the organization has a lot of roots in the USHL, and he's a big 6'2", 205 pound winger. Dylan Peterson, a 6'4" center out of the program. So I think we'll see with Judd Brackett leaving the organization if they still lean towards that those American kids as they have in the past and they've been so successful with. But those are a few options anyways.
Well, Cam, you're talking about some of the prospects that you're a lot higher on than the industry consensus. I want to flip it around. Are there guys who maybe, you know, a lot of other lists would have in the top 15 or even top 10 that you look at and are a little more wary, a little more skeptical of their case to be drafted that high?
Yeah, absolutely. Probably the big ones, Justin Barron, who I've got him at the tail end of my second round at 55 overall, you know, 6'2", 195 pound right shot defenseman. So that's going to draw some attention, especially the way he skates. He skates very, very well. So I think on Bob McKenzie's list, they've got him as like top 15, top 16, something like that. And I've got him way down to 55. He's not very smart. And you can't teach players to think the game quicker. You can a little bit, I suppose, but that processing speed is very, very difficult to improve on at such a level. And so for me, you know, I think putting him at 55 that's just basically giving him credit for, you know, he's a very good skater. He has the size, and that's going to afford you a lot of chances. But if you can't think the game, I think that's going to be a knock on you. Looking at a couple other guys, you know, I'm a little bit lower on Braden Schneider. There's been whispers that this guy could end up going top five, top 10. I've got him 23. I think that he's a really sturdy defenseman who's going to probably be a safe guy to chew up some minutes on, you know, as your number four or five, but I do not see the upside to have him that high. Dylan Holloway, I'm a little bit lower on than a lot of boards at 21, but again, you know, we're kind of nitpicking at that zone. I think Jan Misak is a really divisive player. I've got him just outside my first round. Again, he's a player that lots of lists have in the teens. I think that there's just some concerns there, and I know that there are some NHL teams that are concerned too with him. And you know, I put out a couple of hot takes there last week, and I said that there's a chance that this kid falls out of the first two rounds even too. So I think a very divisive prospect there.
And Cam, I wanted to ask you about a guy who will be familiar to junior hockey fans here in the Lower Mainland, Justin Sortoff of the Vancouver Giants. You know, he came into the year, I think, with a lot of people saying he could be a first round prospect. It seems like he's fallen down into kind of the second round range for a lot of people. You know, I was saying to Batch just before we had you on, Sortoff was a guy who was on an absolute tear when the season got paused, and he was starting to look like that first round prospect that people were talking about him as. And what do you make of Sortoff's game, and is he one of those guys who was really hurt by the season getting cut short?
Yeah, I think he was. I think that's a really good example of one of the players that probably was hurt by this, because he had that great draft minus one season that really put him on the map as like, hey, this guy could be, as you said, a first round prospect. And he's a really athletic kid, despite not being filled out yet. So he's got a really nice shot. I think I like the way he anticipates plays. He's a good passer. His work rate is usually through the roof. And that's what we saw in that draft minus one. This year, I felt like it was a little inconsistent. And that motor wasn't always there. So I think he can flash that high end skill sometimes, but it remains infrequent. So maybe he was getting it together at the end of the season, and he would have that opportunity to run that through the WHL playoffs and kind of solidify himself as like, hey, no, I should be a top 40 guy, not a top 60 guy. But that just means there's more value for teams. I think that's really going to be the crux of this draft, is that teams that put a lot of emphasis and they put a lot of money into their video scouting and digging in on these players that maybe were looking like their developmental arc was trending in the right direction and then cut off, is that there's going to be tons and tons of opportunity to mine for talent later in the draft on day two there. So second round, third round, fifth round, there's going to be players that are slipping through their cracks. And we hear it every year, right? The GM will talk about their picks and they'll say, you know, like, we couldn't believe he was there. We got all our players, right? And usually BS. But this year, I think that there is a real opportunity for teams to be having guys ranked maybe in the 20s or 30s, and they're pulling them, you know, in the hundreds. So I think the smart organizations, the one that can scout well and to utilize the talent that they have in-house and basically the platforms that they have in-house, right? Like their scouting platforms are gonna dwarf what I have access to for the most part too. So they have the opportunity, if they're putting their money and their time into it properly, that there's going to be opportunities here.
And on dauberprospects.com, Cam, you've got your final rankings up right now, as we've been talking about, but finals in quotation marks. Is it fair to say that if some of these leagues get back underway in the fall before the draft is held, whenever that might be, that there is still an opportunity to watch some of these players and tweak things a little bit from not just your perspective, but the perspective of, you know, NHL scouts everywhere as well?
I think it has to. I think there has to be an opportunity because, you know, like we're saying, that in Sweden, in Finland, in Russia, they're going to be firing up in September. And so if the draft is until mid to late October, like some of these kids will have a full off season of training, plus a dozen or so games under their belt. You know, like if a kid like Lucas Raymond comes out who was seeing, you know, third, fourth line ice time in the SHL this season, and obviously his production reflected the little deployment that he got. If all of a sudden he's playing a top six role and maybe he's put on an inch and 10 pounds of muscle and he's out there scoring a ton of goals, like, well, maybe he's not number five on my list anymore. Maybe he's back at number three. So I think that there should be an opportunity for every team to get together. It'll be really interesting with the team contracts that the Oilers have. A lot of talk in this market about Judd Brackett, obviously the contract expiring at the end of June. Now the NHL has said that they are extending these player contracts and these staff contracts through at least the playoffs. So I know some teams, they went out there and they had their big scouting meetings, you know, a month ago for the draft, and maybe they don't meet again before the draft, which I think is crazy. But, you know, it's going to be interesting because some of these guys, they have that intellectual property, and if they're free agents, they're free agents. They won't be at those scouting meetings. So I think that teams are going to probably try to lock in their board as soon as they can. I don't have to worry about that for me. So I can go back and reflect and change things if I need to in October. But it will be interesting to see if teams are able to do that with their full staff.
He is Cam Robinson, the managing editor of Dauber Prospects. Follow him on Twitter at @hockey_Robinson and go to dauberprospects.com right now to read his latest 2020 NHL draft rankings. Cam, thanks for taking some time today. Appreciate it.
Yeah, not at all, guys. Nice chat.